All right, 8:02, time to help fund scholarships for U.S. veterans. Donate to the Help a Hero program at a Sport Clips near you. See you guys on the line. I see you there. We want to get to Mike Florio now, though, because he is ready to go from Pro Football Talk, the hardest working man in show business, and he joins us every single Tuesday at 8 a.m. Hello, Mike. How are you?
Doing great. How are you guys?
Do we have Mike Florio?
I am here.
We do have Mike. We got to click a button here. I can hear him. I mean, I can't hear him.
Hi.
We don't have him? All right, then I'll take a phone call while we figure that out. Dean, you're on KHTK. Hey, Dean.
David.
Dino.
K-Tom.
Hey there.
Tiny Nate Archibald.
Yeah.
Hey, first off, Geno Smith, are you serious? I mean, come on. Joe Willie, yeah, he threw a crap load of interceptions, and I'm not 60, but there's no way you can compare that little turd to Joe Namath.
Oh, no, it's not even close. I just like to throw stats out there and needle the old folks, that's all.
I know, that's why I took the bait, so I called in. But, hey, Nate, I just wanted to tell you, if you're going to cry over the King season, use the puffs because they have lotion in them.
So oh, wow.
A little, less on your nose. But,
I graduated to puffs when I was about 14.
Nice. Yeah, my grandmother used to stuff them up her sleeve, and she always had them at the ready.
Dude, isn't that the weird thing about grandmas? Like, they've always got a tissue when you need one, and you're not sure if it's been used or not, but it's always necessary.
But you don't care because they're, you know, they're baking you cookies and they're giving you hugs.
What's up, Dean? Because we got Florio on the line here, so I want
to. You're talking the Kings. I think the Warriors are going to be fine during the regular season. I don't know who's going to rebound and play. They get down and dirty in the playoffs, and that's going to be the problem with them. As far as the Kings go, I'm expecting the worst. That way I can enjoy the overpriced food that's really good at the Golden One Center. And then if they play better, which I think they will because I really like the coach, when they have a better record, I'll be pleasantly surprised.
Yeah, I think that's the thing. Temper expectations and you get what you want at some point. In the meantime, enjoy the process, Sam Hinkie. All right, here we go. I think we figured our lines out here. From Pro Football Talk, it is our good friend Mike Florio. Hello, Mike. How are you?
I am doing great. How are you guys?
Good, good. I had a button on my side that wasn't flipped, so
it's Dave's fault.
I'll take the L for that one. Mike, but I will not go off and say that my board op and my boss – and everybody else at CBS does not believe in me, so I got to believe in myself, which is what Ryan Fitzpatrick did just a couple days ago after a Jets win. Now he's back because Geno Smith is out with the ACL. Is this going to be awkward, or is it just the business of football?
Isn't it great that a guy can play poorly enough to get benched and then have a chip on his shoulder based upon the fact that he got benched because he was bad enough to be benched? And my position is, whatever it takes to motivate a football player or anyone else, wherever the motivation comes from, that's fine with me. The motivation is there, and now we'll see what Ryan Fitzpatrick can do now that he's the starter again. He doesn't have to worry about Geno Smith anymore as long as Ryan Fitzpatrick remains with the Jets, and who knows how much longer that will be. But Bryce Petty, Christian Hackenberg, if the Jets at some point are, as a practical matter, done. And they're really not, as a practical matter, done yet. They could get hot. They could win some games. They're a couple of wins away if they could manage them. And their schedule is going to soften up from being at least relevant. So Fitzpatrick's the guy until they're essentially done. And he has another chance now. And if he does have greater motivation, chip on his shoulder, whatever the case, whatever it takes to play better. And that's essentially what Todd Bowles said yesterday. Hey, if he's mad, if he plays better mad and he's mad, then that's great. Let's go out and play better.
Mike, Arian Foster announces his retirement in the middle of the season, which is pretty unprecedented at this point. But when you think of his career and what he's done, are you going to remember his stats? Or are you going to remember his injury-riddled years and where he never really became the player he was supposed to be?
I think you remember both. I mean, for a while, he burned very brightly. He didn't enjoy much team success. He's part of this Texans organization that right now is good enough to get to the playoffs and good enough to get beaten early in the playoffs. And I think that's where they are this year with Brock Osweiler. They're good enough to win the division and good enough to either lose at home in the wild card round or go on the road and get destroyed by the Broncos or the Patriots. So Foster was great. At one point, he was in the conversation as one of the best running backs in the NFL, and now it's just over. And I admire him for recognizing that it's over when it's over. And usually what happens is football players are like Bruce Willis at the end of The Sixth Sense, spoiler alert, when the ring hits the ground and rolls away. They're the last ones to know that they've been dead all along. In this case, Arian Foster was the first one to realize and admit that it's over. And I've seen some characterize this as the latest example of a football player walking away with gas in the tank. No, he walked away the moment he recognized that the tank was empty, before anyone else had to tell him the tank is empty. And it's the perfect landing of the plane. And it seemed like a surprise, but when you consider he's not going to be the workhorse, Jay Ajayi has had two great games, yeah, and the injuries are still there for Arian Foster, it's just over. And I admire him for recognizing it, but it's not part of this narrative / hot take that guys are fleeing the sport while they still have, you know, while they still have games left. He was exactly at the right point to walk away.
Mike Florio, ProFootballTalk.com, joining us on The Drive. Mike, for my money, the AFC West is the toughest division in football. You got three teams with two losses, but I'm looking at the Chargers, man. Ever since Joey Bosa's come back, he's been lighting it up. They've been on a hot streak, and now they've got an elite quarterback and a top-end edge pass rusher. Are we looking past the Chargers, and do they have a chance to make a bit of a push here and some noise in that division?
Well, you know, the schedule gets a lot easier after they go to Denver this week. It's going to be very difficult to beat the Broncos there and complete the sweep. And I don't like it when teams play each other twice in a three-game stretch. It will be Denver at Atlanta and at Denver for the Chargers. But after that, they have Tennessee and Miami coming to San Diego. They could win both of those games, although the Dolphins are suddenly a lot better. And after the bye, they've got winnable games. They're not going to be easy. They have to go to Houston. It's not going to be an easy win. They've got to go to Carolina. That's not going to be easy if the Panthers start to figure things out. But they have games on the schedule that they should be able to win, and they could vie for a wild card berth. And, you know, that's one of the problems with the current structure of the NFL. They have eight divisions with four teams each, and you could be in a division with the four best teams in football. And by definition, by structure, only three of them have a chance to make it to the postseason. And, you know, meanwhile, you've got the AFC South, where somebody's got to get a playoff berth and a home playoff game. And I don't like that, especially in a year like this, where there is one division in the conference that seems to have four really good teams. But, you know, they dug a hole early. The question is, can they dig out of it at a time when their margin for error is narrower than it would have been if they hadn't blown all those fourth quarter leads? And they only have themselves to blame for that.
Mike Florio, ProFootballTalk.com, joining us. Mike, what an interesting Sunday night game between the Cardinals and the Seahawks.
Really? Are you serious?
Thank you, Mike. Thank you.
One way or the other, it was interesting.
No, well, it was interesting. And here's the thing. If I was at home and not at the NBC studios working the game and getting ready for different things we do and you know, having to pay attention to the game, if I was just watching at home, I would have checked out early. I probably would have watched The Walking Dead or the football game. Same difference. And I would have come back at, like, you know, 11:15 Eastern time to see where it stood, because I would have been confident that this thing is just going to continue to be punt, 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 punt. And if anything big happens, I'll see the highlights. And, you know, that's the problem the NFL currently has. Last week, Roger Goodell said, we're not losing viewers. We just have viewers who aren't watching as much. And when the games aren't exciting, and I know that there's going to be a crowd out there that says, oh, defense is exciting. Well, most people do not agree with that. And the NFL decided back in the 70s to change the rules to increase the offensive output to lead to more exciting plays, more points scored. And that helped give rise to fantasy football. And now that fantasy football is such an important part of the game, does anybody really want to see a 3-3 game at the end of regulation who plays fantasy football? They want 30-30 like the Chargers-Falcons game at the end of regulation. Now, the challenge will be, if you change the rules in any way to try to inject more offense into the game, that 30-30 Falcons-Chargers game could end up being 60-60, and then you have arena football. If they do any, and I don't know what they need to do. They need to make the games more exciting. I don't know whether it's, and I hesitate to even say this because I think it could quickly be crafted into a hot take, but take away the ability to chuck the receiver within 5 yards, give everybody a free release off the line of scrimmage. You'll see more offense if that happens. The question is, how much more offense are you going to see? And I don't know that I trust the people who brought us the the new touchback rule as a way to reduce kickoff returns. You know, so they try to change something. The next thing you know, the games are going to be 3-3 as a norm and not as a, you know, once every couple of week aberration. And that's, you can't have those aberration games in primetime. And the question is, how much of it really is an aberration? There was a Panthers-Buccaneers game that was 6-0 at halftime a couple of weeks ago. They just need more scoring. They need more excitement. They need to come up with a way to get there.
And that's kind of where I was going, because of the boring aspect. Nobody likes ties and the whole kissing your sister thing. Is there any conversation, any movement at all with the competition committee or whoever's relevant to this of getting the NFL to something similar to what college football does in their overtimes?
Well, that's never really come up, and I think part of it is a quiet arrogance on the part of the NFL that they are not going to copy approaches that other lower levels of football do. Just one of the topics a couple of weeks ago, just last week, making pass interference calls reviewable. Well, the Canadian Football League already does that. Does the NFL want to mimic something the CFL, which is beneath the NFL, has done? There's a, and that doesn't mean that the NFL never will consider or embrace things that other levels of the sport do. The NFL, after all, adopted the two-point conversion back in 1994, which is something that college football had had before that. But there is, I think, that inherent resistance to allowing innovations to trickle up. The NFL's attitude is, we make the innovations and they trickle down. So, I don't like ties either. And it's rare that they happen. It's like once every 2 years. And 15 extra minutes of football, especially when you play on Sunday night. What if one of those teams was playing Thursday? You know, maybe there's a more efficient way to resolve these games that doesn't involve 15 more minutes of football.
Mike, do you think there's any truth to the idea that the NFL would balk at a college-type overtime system because of the implications it would have on gambling?
No, because you mean like over-unders?
It could be over under specifically. And then you've got the stat element to it. I don't think they want the crazy stats and the crazy numbers. But I mean, I see the NFL is so intertwined with gambling. I just heard that idea and wondering if you thought there was any truth to it.
I don't think that. I think an aversion to allowing a skewing of the stats would be more like, especially, you know, touchdowns. You mm-hmm. Because you get some ridiculous outcomes with some of these college games. But I think that the NFL adopted its overtime procedures, and it was a big deal when they were changed back in 2010 to allow for the team that kicked off to match a field goal, if a field goal is what the receiving team scores on its first drive. I just think that's so ingrained now that they're not going to change it.
I'm curious, Mike, obviously with the NBA or the NFL trade deadline coming up November 1st, we're already hearing the trade rumors and the talks. Torrey Smith is one of the names for the 49ers. You've also got Joe Staley. My question is, when it comes to the 49ers, do they just need to clean house and get rid of anybody that has value at this point in the season after a 1-6 start?
Well, here's the challenge, and this is one of the reasons why the NFL has a trade deadline. They don't want teams to completely give up, and they also don't want contenders to be able to go out and cherry-pick players late in the year. And if you do fold the tents, what message does that send to your fan base? And I don't know that it matters at this point. Because
1-6 start, that's the message.
Those traffic problems that were keeping people out of the stands on the Thursday night game against the Cardinals, apparently they were still present on the Sunday game against the Buccaneers. I think those traffic problems are going to be there all year long now. And it's a fine balance. What message are you sending to your fan base? And maybe you need to start severing ties with some of the players that you can get value for, and you take the position, we're building for the future. And, why pay a bunch of money to guys who aren't part of that future here? So I can understand trying to do it. Then the challenge becomes, what kind of a deal can you get? And are you willing to take the best offer that's available, even if you think that you should be getting more for Joe Staley or Torrey Smith or anybody else who possibly would be available?
Well, Mike, that's why I think this is an intriguing question, because I'm sitting right next to two 49ers fans that have been whining and crying for a while that they're pissed if they go on and win any more games, because they really want the season to be a complete dumpster fire because they're looking towards the draft.
Yep.
And, you know, I say this every year, and I've argued from time to time that there should be a draft lottery, because there is a real temptation to tank. And, we always hear it from the perspective of coaches and players. Oh, there's no way we would ever tank. Well, right, but the owners who decide to go with Geno Smith, for example, or decide to go with Christian Ponder if it comes to that. You know, the owners can set the policy of the football operation by saying, I want to see what the second string cornerback can do. I want to see what the backup left tackle can do. I want to see what the backup running back can do. And you have a de facto tank by virtue of the people that ownership and the front office decide to put on the field. And a couple of years ago, and this never got the attention it deserved. The Buccaneers clearly tanked in the second half, week 17 against the Saints. They took out a bunch of their starters. They were leading the game. The Saints came back and won, and it allowed the Buccaneers to get in position to draft Jameis Winston. Of course, there's a temptation to tank. And if I know my favorite team isn't going to make it to the playoffs, then why not tank? Who cares whether it's 6-10, 5-11, 4-12, 3-13? Who cares? As long as you're not the 2008 Detroit Lions, as long as you have one win, who cares? Because what do we see every year? Oh, man, if we were just a couple of spots higher, we could have gotten that guy. Well, maybe you can be a couple of spots higher if you do what you need to do now by way of losing games.
Well, and the problem here is this is one of the two 49er fans that's been crying next to Katie all year long, is that you worry that if the Niners do get, and let's say the one picks off the table with the Browns, they get the two or the three, that Trent Baalke's going to go out and grab the most talented guy that has a former torn ACL.
Yeah, exactly. I was just going to say the same thing. That's right. Let's find somebody who's got a torn ACL, and that'll be the pick.
So then here's the thing.
You assume it's going to be Trent Baalke.
Of course. That's where I'm going here. Now, the Banners are coming back to Levi Stadium this weekend. There's new, you know, the people are talking about that. They'll be flying the I Hate Jed York or Fire Trent Baalke banners, and we know Jed doesn't like that. Is Jed's head buried so far up his rear end that at this point there's any doubt that he's going to remove Trent Baalke at some point between now and game one next year?
Well, when Jed York was talking to the media after they had the mutual parting with Jim Harbaugh, who did Jed say to hold accountable if they don't compete for championships? That's Trent Baalke?
Yeah.
Or Jed York?
Yeah.
How do you hold Jed York accountable?
Right.
What do you do? And, you know, you hold him accountable by having traffic problems on game day, by not showing up, by not buying jerseys, by not caring about the team. And see, ultimately, that's the challenge every NFL team faces. It's an entertainment business, and you have to convince fans to spend money, time, and emotion. If you make your fan base apathetic, you're done. And the 49ers fan base is getting close to apathetic. Have we seen a team that has gone from being consistent contender to consistent bottom of the stack more quickly than the 49ers? Mm-hmm. And when ESPN ranks, and I look, these are stupid subjective rankings, but still, ESPN ranks all 122 American Major League sports franchises, and the 49ers come in at 122. That is a stinging indictment. And
with a brand new stadium, Mike.
And it's just amazing to think that not long ago, Jed York was viewed as a rising star, a guy, you know, the next Eddie DeBartolo, and here come the 49ers, and the dynasty is back, and all because they couldn't deal with Jim Harbaugh. I don't know. I still don't know what the truth is as it relates to Jim Harbaugh, but somebody had the bright idea that they should get rid of Harbaugh and put in Jim Tom Sula, and that was a mistake. And now this Chip Kelly thing is not working out, and they look horrible. As long as they have 7 months to get ready for a game, they look great. If they had a seven-month bye between games, they would be unbeatable. It's when they have 7 days instead of 7 months that it's a problem. And it's you know, the Buccaneers aren't a horrible team, but that's a game that the 49ers, if they had any hope, if they were any good, that's a game that they should win. And they got beat by double digits. I mean, they're in a hole now that's going to be very difficult for them to dig out of. And at what point do you press the reset button on the entire football operation? And then the question becomes, at what point do you press the reset button on the entire franchise?
Yep.
Mike, I know where my apathy comes from as a 49ers supporter, but do you feel like a lot of this apathy broadly has to do with the fact that, you know, 49ers fans have a reputation as front runners? They haven't been winning recently, or do you think a lot of them do trace it back to, dude, why'd you fire Jim Harbaugh?
I think Harbaugh is part of the frustration. That look, and who knows whether Harbaugh really wanted to stay. You know, there are so many different stories and theories, and he wanted to be paid like a Super Bowl winning coach, and he hadn't won a Super Bowl. Well, you know what? Maybe coaches need to make more money than they currently get. Maybe there should be more coaches who are good who should be paid like Super Bowl winning coaches, even if they haven't, because there's no salary cap. And if you look at the growth rate for coaches over the last 20 or 30 years, it hasn't expanded nearly the way that it should, and the coach has a huge impact. As the talent gaps get closer and closer, a huge impact coaches have on winning and losing. So, you know, I know there was friction between Harbaugh and Balke, and there was pretty much friction between Harbaugh and everyone. But you know what? When Bill Walsh was there, there was plenty of friction. They didn't always get along. It's a stressful business. You need to find a way to work with people. John Harbaugh and Jim Harbaugh have the same DNA. And I've heard that John Harbaugh is worse at times than Jim Harbaugh. He just has a better ability to compose himself, except when somebody kicks the plug out of the wall during the Super Bowl. and they've been able to coexist with John Harbaugh in Baltimore, now in part because they've been consistent contenders, but so were the 49ers, and they couldn't live with Jim Harbaugh. So I don't know where this thing stands right now. If I was a 49ers fan, though, I would have even greater despair than if I was a Browns fan, because at least with the Browns, there's a sense that they're laying the foundation for something good. With the 49ers, I don't sense that there's any plan, that there's any positivity, that there's anything to be hopeful about. You know, you can at least say in most cities, wait till next year. With the 49ers, it's like, oh God, we have to do this again next year.
In addition to the great pro football talk, where can people hear, see, and read Mike Florio?
Well, if you're fighting insomnia on the West Coast, 3 a.m. to 6 a.m., PFT Live on NBC Sports Radio, the final 2 hours of simulcast on NBCSN. The entire show does re-air. Although I don't want to draw any listeners away, we do have Levante David in 12 minutes on the re-air, but you can hear it on the podcast too. And we do it every weekday, and it's nice to get up early and pass out around 2 p.m. Eastern time and have the second shift after that.
We just got about 20 seconds, Mike, but I got to ask you, Cubs or Indians?
Pirates. and you know what? I saw this comment online.
Uh-huh. Don't read the comments, Mike.
But no, not a comment on at PFT. Somebody pointing out, and I think it was Deadspin, the idea that all these people are going to be pulling for the Cubs because they're a sentimental favorite. Do you think any Cubs fans are going to pull for your team because they become sentimental favorites?
No. We will see you. We will talk to you next week. Right. Always a blast, Mike. Thank you.
See you guys.
All right. That is Mike Florio, ProFootballTalk.com. He has a great point, too, about the Cubs fans.
Yeah.
I don't think they're pulling for anybody else. We'll take a break. Come back. Speaking of those 49ers, Zane Beatles is going to join us, and he's on their line, and he's the one dealing with it each and every single week. We'll talk to him next on The Drive, Sports 1140 KHDK. Zane Beatles of the 49ers will join us momentarily. Had a text on the text line. We were talking to Mike Florio. Whom are the Raiders focusing on the Niners again? Shut up. Greg Pop is going to join us tomorrow. What would you say the ratio of Raider to Niner talk has been on the show since the season started? I'd say 8-1. I think that's about accurate. 7-1, 8-1.
Listen, I don't want to put a number on it. I can tell you there's nobody here that enjoys talking about the 49ers.
No.
So whatever those numbers come out to be, even if they're skewed in favor of the 49ers, that sure as hell isn't intentional.
I mean, there's not we had Monday. We didn't even talk about it. Are you kidding me? Well, I'll tell you right now, we'll bring in Niners guard Zane Beatles. Now, this is important here. Zane is partnering with Cheerful Giving, Lyft, and Ticket City. Going to bring Niner fans the ultimate game day experience. Fans can enter by making a $25 donation to the Zane Beatles Parade Foundation. You can check that out at cheerfulgiving.com/champion/Zane Beatles, and that's B-A-B-E-A-D-L-E-S. Zane joins us right now. Zane, we appreciate you getting up this early. It's Dave, Katie, and Nate. How are you?
I'm doing well. How are you guys doing?
Doing really good. You know, knew you in college, read the story about how you were touched by a young man and what is really a tragic story, and that's kind of spun you into doing some of this really cool stuff you're doing. Talk a bit about that.
Yeah, so when I was in college, there was a young boy named Riker who had a brain tumor and knew what he was going through, but was a huge University of Utah fan, and we kind of adopted him onto the team my redshirt freshman year, and he was around in the locker room with us at games, all kinds of stuff. And seeing him go through his battle really had an impact on me. And I've always been big on giving back. So 3 years ago when I went to start my own foundation, you know, I was looking for what to do. And with his impact, you know, pediatric cancer was something that I definitely had a passion to try to support. So that was kind of the beginnings of the Zane Beatles Parade Foundation.
Zane, tell us a little bit about what the ultimate game day experience would be like for the fan that is lucky enough to win this.
So, yeah, you donate $25, you get entered into a chance to win this. You get tickets to the game against the Patriots on November 20th. You get sideline passes for a pregame. You go down and watch us all warm up and be there down with the players. And you get round-trip car service from Lyft to and from the game. So, pretty good deal, you know, go and support a good cause, $25, and then go have a great day at a Niners game.
Zane Beatles joining us on KHDK. Zane, I want to preface the most of the remainder of the interview by letting you know, Nate and I are huge, diehard, lifelong Niner fans. So everything we're about to ask comes from a place of love and respect when it comes to the team. But I've had to up my migraine medication this year. I'm not going to talk about professionalism. I'm not going to talk about you guys wanting to win ball games. I trust all that to be true. But my God, this has been a rough season, and now it seems that pretty much everybody is on the trading block. How the hell, other than the fact that you've got a pretty decent contract and good for you, do you stop from firing a hammer and nail through your head every Monday?
You know, it's obviously been very frustrating for the fans so far this year, and even more so for us going out there and playing. You know, it's not the result that we want to have happen on the field. That being said, you know, we are professionals, and our job is to go out there and perform at the highest level we possibly can every single day. And, you know, you need to focus on that, and you need to focus on the guys that are in your position and the guys that you play around. And, you know, I've been in situations in this league where things are dire and down, and guys are on the chopping block and coaches are on the chopping block and all that kind of stuff. And then you win one game and things kind of turn around and you start getting on a roll. So, you know, that has to be the focus, is just day to day trying to be the best team that we can possibly be. And, you know, keep working towards that time when things might flip and things start going our way. And, you know, I can promise you that work is being put in, and we're trying to get there.
You know, and Zane, too, I mean, with 53 guys on the roster, it's tough to not have, like, one or two malcontents. But it seems like publicly everyone is, you know, they're on board with Chip. They're on board with the scheme. You got Jim O'Neill defensively. Everyone seems to, you know, there doesn't seem to be a whole lot of doom and gloom. It's just the results aren't there. So how do you guys, I guess, cope with that on a week-to-week basis, just feeling like, you know what, maybe this is the week?
You know, we really have to take that on ourselves, and the fact that, you know, even this past week, early in the game, we came out fast, started fast, up 14-0. You know, they come back, score a couple scores, and at halftime it's a 3-point game. Then we come out and have a couple mistakes, you know, a couple turnovers, and they get some momentum, and we don't recover from that. So, you know, it really comes down to us to being able to weather situations where things aren't going our way, and then execute at a high enough level with all the small details to win NFL football games. It is very hard to win in this league. And the difference between the top teams in this league and the bottom teams in this league is not very much. And the attention to those details is really what sets those teams apart.
Yeah, and I guess that's what I was going to ask next, too. When you go through those film sessions, I mean, it seems to me, watching the games every week, we're talking about a matter of, I don't know, 3, 4, maybe 5 plays tops that don't go your way. And then the final score doesn't necessarily reflect that it was just a couple of moments that really killed it.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's, you know, that's pretty normal for this league. Mm-hmm. You know, you have a handful of plays every game that kind of determine things, and you never know when those plays are going to happen. So, you know, you have to be at your best every single play when you go out there. And we haven't been that way so far this year. And that's got to be the focus for us, to be consistently good in all those situations going forward.
Zane Beatles of the San Francisco 49ers joining us this morning. If you had to put your finger on one thing that is really plaguing you guys right now, Zane, what would that be?
Honestly, you know, I don't think there is just one thing. You know, I think you can go and look at times in games where the defense is playing great ball and the offense isn't moving the ball. You can go and see the opposite of that. You know, you can see special teams making some plays or special teams making some mistakes. You know, it really is a fully a true team game. And we've all taken our turns at certain times throughout the year and in certain games to kind of, you know, screw things up a little bit. So it's really got to be all of us working together to really get things going.
Zane Beadle's joining us. Zane, you've been in successful situations before. You were Pro Bowler with the Denver Broncos. You played, I believe, every snap or damn near every snap all 4 years you were there. You come to San Francisco via Jacksonville. And obviously, Jacksonville going through a lot of the same issues the Niners were. We talk about team culture. Do you sense that the 49ers, top to bottom, have a culture similar to something you experienced in Denver? Or is that another thing that's maybe lacking? It just seems like there's a disconnect between top and bottom in addition to what's going on the field.
I definitely think there is a winning culture here. You know, with the history of the team, and the guys in that locker room. You know, I've been around a lot of different teams. I'm going into my seventh year now, and every team is different every single year. And the guys that we have on this team come to work every single day ready to go, ready to put their best foot forward and ready to make each other better. And that's a huge thing. If you don't have that on a team, there's no way you can be successful. So we have that piece of things. You know, the next thing is just kind of getting that winning attitude or that winning feeling. You know, like I said, it's hard to win in this league, but once you get it going and you kind of understand, especially the young guys, when they understand what it takes to win an NFL football game and how you have to play all four quarters, then, you know, things really start to take off. And I know people have said this, and I'm sure fans are tired of hearing it, but we're really not that far off from being a team that can consistently win week in and week out.
Zane, real fast before we let you go, got about 30 seconds. Just tell fans where they can go to enter to win this Ultimate Game Day experience.
Yeah, you know, the best way probably is to go to my Twitter account, at Zane Beatles. Right there at the top, there's a tweet out there that has a link to download the Cheerful Giving app. And go on there and donate to the Zane Beatles Parade Foundation, and you'll automatically be entered to win. And looking forward to somebody having a great day in November.
Good on you, Zane. Good job, you know, not just cashing checks, but making a difference off the field. And we appreciate that and the opportunity to promote what you're doing because it's a damn good cause. Thank you. And sincerely, good luck the rest of the season.
Thank you, guys. I appreciate it.
All right, take care. Zane Beadle of the 49ers will take a break, come back, wrap up the show. Opening day in the NBA. We'll have a little bit of audio for you as well. And any leftover phone calls at 339-1140, 1-800-920-1140. It's The Drive. Final segment next. Sports 1140 KHDK. Matt, sometimes you surprise me. It is 848. Time to help fund scholarships for U.S. veterans. Donate to the Help a Hero program at a Sport Clips near you. You guys want to hear from Tom Brady talking about...
Yeah.
How about Tom Brady talking about domestic violence in the league?
Oh, Lord.
I mean, come on. He weighed in. Here we go. Tom Brady. So, Nate, if you're not going to say anything, please allow me. Tom, I love you. I do. I love Tom Brady. I love him as a representative of the NFL, and I think he's the greatest quarterback to ever play the game, and that's tough for me as a Niner fan, Joe Montana and all that. That being said, Tom, first off, why wouldn't you speak on it? What are you going to do, piss off the NFL and insult them? Because I don't know. They just spent the last year and a half to 2 years absolutely ramrodding you through the court system. So there's that. What are you going to do?
Because of air pressure.
Thank you. Number one. Number two, Tom. I get when Michael Jordan said Republicans buy sneakers too, which is why he never got political. But I think we can all get on the side of domestic violence is bad, which he said. And what is wrong with saying, hey, listen, I grew up with three sisters. I think it's a tragedy anytime this happens. And the NFL is borderline criminally negligent in how they respond and the culture created to almost, I don't want to say encourage, that's too tough, but they're dealing out a $50 penalty for a $50,000 crime, and that's a horrible analogy in itself.
No, what the NFL does, though, I mean, because you're absolutely right, their entire system around this, because, number one, it is not controversial in any way, shape, or form to say domestic violence is bad and you're against it. That's what's so mind-numbing. It took so much work just to get him to have a completely uncontroversial opinion. The league has gone so far out of the way with their policies, basically what they do now, because they had their little whatever PR push for the No More campaign.
Yes.
Remember that?
Yes.
And that was kind of shown to be something that was completely toothless, doesn't really give any money to anything, doesn't do much of anything except for put ads out there. What the NFL has succeeded in doing with their domestic violence policy is criminalizing their players and keeping the owners out of blame. That's what this whole thing is designed around. And that's why immediately you get Roger Goodell making arbitrary whatever punishments, handing out these penalties so that everyone can be like, well, the league is doing their part. It's those criminal players that need to be dealt with.
Garbage. They're all over wearing pink for breast cancer awareness, and that's fine. How about getting out there for domestic violence? Seriously, why not? As you said, what are they going to do? Are you going to upset the group of domestic violence abusers and maybe they're just going to stop watching? Are you going to lose that segment of the NFL? Is that who you're afraid of pissing off? Tom Brady has a podium, and I'm not big for saying, hey, you're an athlete, you must speak out. You have to. No, you don't. He's a human being. Do what the hell he wants. But Jesus, Tom, you don't have to wrap yourself up in a Teflon condom every single time you get asked something of substance. Jesus, it's beating women.
There are a number of fantastic nonprofits that focus specifically on this. And I am on the board of one of them here in Sacramento, the Sacramento Regional Family Justice Center. Why can't the NFL take part in getting involved with those organizations, being one of the key contributors? They're looking for money always to make a difference, to help people that are victims of domestic violence, of sex trafficking, elder abuse, all of these things. Why can you not make a stance and get involved with a cause that actually does something?
You know why?
Because they want their players on the field.
Yep, it does more for their public image to put a couple of ads out there with Eli Manning saying, hey, it stops here, than it does to put their money towards an actual worthy cause that gets something done.
All right, well, somebody who's always had a good public image, Marv Albert, is here to talk about a few things. Here he is,
Dave.
Kevin Durant and the Golden State Warriors.
Dave.
That's Marv Albert on a couple of different topics. And here real quick before we go, let's just do a little mini Nostra Dumbass, because it is, we don't have to record this, this is just for fun. It is the start of the NBA season, so I'll ask you guys real quick. We'll start game one. The Cleveland Cavaliers host the New York Knicks. And here's where I want to make it fun. I'm going to say the Cavs win by, I'm going to put the over-under at 12. Do you take the over or the under?
Over.
I'm taking the under.
You're taking the under?
Yeah,
Knicks make it closer.
Yeah, I think the Knicks will, and I think it's going to be a result of free throws at the end. I think they'll be closer than we think, but they'll probably get it within single digits.
This is when the Cavs get their rings.
I mean,
they raise their throws
at the end. I'm sorry. You know, garbage buckets.
They raise their banner. They get their championship rings. That is a tough situation for any team to walk into and try and come out with a win.
I'll tell you what a tough situation is. How about being a Cleveland fan and you going to the Cavs home opener, or are you going to go see game one of the World Series? Dear Lord, are there enough people in Cleveland?
I'm going to the Cavs game to watch game one of the World Series.
Trailblazers, 5.5-point favorites over the Jazz. Who do you take in that game?
Oh, I'm taking the Trailblazers.
Yeah.
Upset City, give me the Jazz!
Yeah, no. I'm going to take Portland in their home
opener. I just
think
without Gordon Hayward, it's going to be tough until he comes back from that finger injury.
Spurs visit the Warriors, line there, 9 points even. Do the Warriors cover?
Say earlier? I can't remember.
didn't we all agree it was double digits or no?
Yeah.
I think
I took the under.
Did you?
I think it's going to be under 10 points, yeah.
I think you took it at 11. I'm taking over. I think the Warriors cover easily.
Yeah, I'll say Warriors by 14. 339-1140, 1-800-920-1140.
Kevin Durant goes 2 of 22.
Whoa.
Yes.
That is a Nostra dumbass.
Yes, it is. Kawhi Leonard, hello.
Yeah, that's
nice to see you, Kevin Durant.
22 shots for Kevin Durant, huh? Game one.
Yeah.
11th caller wins an Apple TV. You win an Apple TV, and even better, you qualify to win a 60-inch 4K TV, all courtesy of our friends at the Home Theater Company. The grand prize winner will be selected Monday morning, November 7th, right here on The Drive. Home Theater Company's prices are equal or better than chain stores. Visit hometheatercompany.com for all your home theater needs. For Kevin Sharitz, for Matt George, Nate Goodyear, and Katie Christensen, who's off to Phoenix today and may or may not be with us tomorrow.
I will.
We'll see you tomorrow. I don't think so. 6 a.m. on The Drive, Sports 1140 KHDK.